welcome to the World Soft Talk Podcast. My name is Christopher Harris. We're joined on the panel today by Kartik Krishnayer and Kyle Fansler. So here at World Soccer Talk, oh my gosh, it's been a crazy couple of weeks, actually. Well, a week since the last podcast. I think all of us are hardcore soccer fans, as you are the listeners. And we have to start off with what happened on Thursday. We're recording this on Friday. We know that a lot of you, the listeners, probably won't get a chance to listen to this until the weekend or early next week. So we're probably not going to talk a lot about Championship Sunday. Of course, there's a lot of other things going on in world football. But let's start on from Thursday night, Thursday evening. Kyle, what was your take on what happened at Goodison Park?
It was crazy, to say the least. Obviously, Everton, you know, their relegation battle was something that the fans had no interest in taking part in. And the emotions that they had from escaping relegation, ensuring safety in the Premier League, they boiled over and the fans rushed onto the field after the game. It's a trend that we've seen happening this season especially. And I don't know if that's because people were missing out on watching their team for 2 years and now it's all the emotions just boiling over in one event. But they got violent on a couple of occasions in storming the field in the past couple of days. And well, I'm going to start with the Everton one. I think the video that popped out with a fan getting in the face of Crystal Palace manager Patrick Vieira, and Vieira responding by tackling the fan and kicking at him, and then all the Everton fans coming to the other fans' support. And then you look at another instance where Sheffield United, who got knocked out by Nottingham Forest in the championship playoff, Billy Sharp got headbutted by a Nottingham Forest fan that was storming the field. And I'm all for emotion. I'm all for, you know, expressing yourself. And I was raised on SEC football and college football, where storming the field is, you know, it's a great event where you do something unpredictable, something that wasn't supposed to happen, and you celebrate with all your, with 50,000 of your closest friends. But when you're like this, and you're going after coaches, you're going after players, that, in my opinion, has to be punishable. I don't know how, because I feel like it's harsh to punish Nottingham Forest with not getting promoted, or Everton with relegation. I don't think that's the right answer here, but just watching the emotion and the violence that happened as a result of something that should be a celebratory moment, it hurt to watch as a soccer fan.
Kartik, before I share my opinion about pitch invasions, what's your take on pitch invasions in general?
I think it's part of the emotion and it's part of the game. And we've had, I think, the balance between penning in supporters and not allowing them to express themselves at English grounds and the raw emotion of the game, the balance has been out of whack for a while. So I concur. I watched the Billy Sharp. The Vieira thing I didn't find out until later last night, but the Billy Sharp thing I watched as it was going on. So that was and that match. I want to get to that match in a minute anyway. But that second leg. But I don't condone attacking players and coaches, opposing players and coaches, obviously. But there's a raw emotion here, and I think one, COVID did have an impact. Kyle's right about that. We've seen civil disobedience all over the world, really, since COVID restrictions were lifted. But secondly, I don't think most people in the United States and maybe a lot of newer fans in the UK understand Everton Football Club and Nottingham Forest Football Club and the histories of those clubs and the supporters' relationship, working class supporters in particular, their relationship with those football clubs. And I think for Everton supporters, for Forest supporters, it's been really bad because they've been out of the top flight for 20 some years and they've seen Leicester, one of their local rivals, win a title and win an FA Cup very recently and be in Europe regularly very recently. And for Everton, I know that some of the frustrations about how well Liverpool's doing. So I don't condone attacks, but I think it's part of the raw emotion. And I have no problem with pitch invasions as long as they're orderly and they're safe. It's part of the game. I love what Everton supporters were doing before matches at Goodison in this relegation fight, what they were doing away from home as traveling fans to give their side that edge. And it's part of the reason I have such a soft spot for Everton Football Club, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so pitch invasions, I don't condone them, but I understand them in terms of why they happen. And I think it's one of those things that I posted a question. I tweeted out a question on Friday morning. I didn't get a chance to see all of the results yet. But the tweet was, I mean, and this was a serious question, is when was the last time there was a pitch invasion in MLS? Kartik, can you think of any?
I want to say there... No, I can't offhand. I think there may have been one at some point with you know what? No. I'm thinking of lower divisions. I'm thinking of Detroit City. No, in MLS, I don't think so. But I think part of that, Chris, is how the American professional sports culture, and Kyle rightly mentions the SEC football culture, and I would say ACC basketball culture. I stormed the court once in Tallahassee when Florida State beat Duke, so I'm guilty. And then there was a technical foul, and I'm actually not a Florida State fan, but I hate Duke. And there was a technical foul, and because there was still 0.5 seconds left, and Duke got to shoot technical foul shots, it was a mess. But I think American sporting culture, professional sporting culture, is very heavy on security in stadiums and preventing this sort of thing from happening. So even if you have that emotion, you've been trained to express it in a different way, maybe after the match at a bar or whatever.
Yeah, in a way, it's a shame that we're talking about some of these incidents because they were, I mean, just basically stupid idiots, right? There's, I mean, both in the Nottingham Forest Sheffield United game, in the pitch invasion there, and in the Everton Crystal Palace game, I mean, incidents involving two people, just probably drunk, probably dumb, just making stupid, violent acts. However, the whole pitch invasion kind of it does sum up just the passion and the meaning of these games and what it means. You look at some of these games in the last couple of weeks. You had Everton surviving in the Premier League for another season after beating Palace. Stuttgart scored an injury time goal to stay up in the Bundesliga. What a game that was. Nottingham Forest beat Sheffield United on penalty kicks to reach the Championship final. Port Vale beats Swindon Town to reach the playoff final for League Two. The thing that's a commonality among these, all those games were incredible games, emotional games, fantastic to watch. There were pitch invasions in every single one of those. So I think COVID's part of it in terms of just fans feeling kind of a sense of relief. But also at the heart of it, even if we didn't have the pandemic, I think we still would be in a situation where these fans would take the field. And yeah, absolutely. In terms of security, there was very little security in a lot of these games. They should have been expecting pitch invasions. But as clubs have scaled back austerity measures in different countries where there's less police kind of policing stadiums, there's more of an opportunity to rush the field. And we've seen it in the Bundesliga, too. It's almost like it's welcomed.
And France. Yeah, and France, it's been... Well, France has had bigger problems. But yeah, the Bundesliga, you're right, Chris. Come to think of it, I think we've probably had more in the Bundesliga. But I think it's highlighted now in England because of the Sharp incident and the Vieira incident. And like I said, I saw the Sharp thing because they hadn't cut the feed, right, on ESPN Plus, and I'm still that match. As I said, I want to talk about it in a different context in a minute. But so that's terrible to see. And I don't know in Germany that they've had an incident like the Billy Sharp or Patrick Vieira incidents. But it's been happening more often there. You're correct.
Yeah, there's been quite a few where even teams staying up, or actually it was one of the teams. Was it Freiburg qualifying for the Europa League, and the fans invading the pitch, smashing up the goalposts, cutting up the goal nets. And pitch invasion, and the security, the stewards let him on the pitch. They were like, yeah, go ahead. It's really kind of a party atmosphere there. So I think, I mean, outside of the two violent incidents, which were horrible, I think for the most part, the pitch invasions, to me, show the meaning of these games. And to me, at the heart of it is promotion relegation, is what it means to teams, what it means to fans, either staying up in a division such as Everton or trying to not get relegated. Relegation is horrible. I mean, if you're a supporter of a team that's been relegated, it's a really horrible experience. I've gone through that many times. Cardiff, you've gone through it with Man City many times, but there's always that hope of coming back up.
Yeah.
And that's why I asked the question about MLS, is like, when was the last time there was a pitch invasion in MLS? Are those games as meaningful to the fans? Yes, there's more security. Although lately, though, I don't know. I think if you go to any MLS stadium to watch a game, security is not like it was back in, say, I don't know, the 80s or 90s or kind of in previous decades. Kyle, what do you think? Do you think that promotion relegation is, you mean, from this past week, kind of shows the benefits of that when we've seen these games?
Yeah, I do. It's funny, I was looking at that tweet that you sent out, Chris, just before we started recording this, and someone actually replied, you know, when was the last time MLS had a meaningful game? And it's one thing to have a title race, which it's different in MLS just because they have the playoffs and, you know, the regular season ending. It doesn't mean as much as, say, the Premier League or the Bundesliga. But at the bottom of the table in Major League Soccer, if you're not going to make the playoffs, then frankly, who cares? You know, there's not any kind of punishment for finishing poorly. You know, you could rest some players. No, I injure your best player, you know, going into next season. I think promotion relegation, I've always been a big fan of it, coming to Major League Soccer, applying it to the lower leagues and getting that whole kind of pyramid system going. I think it's how you develop the league. I think it's how you get the smaller towns, you know, I say smaller towns, but the smaller clubs more involved and get a bigger fan base growing because people care about those things. I think looking at a club like Leeds, you know, they have a strong history, but they're passion over the last couple of weeks regarding their relegation battle has been something to watch, and the same thing applies to Everton, and we see the same thing at Sheffield United and Nottingham Forest in the playoff semifinals for the championship. It makes things more important as you get later in the season, when for a lot of clubs in MLS, if you're not going to make the playoffs, it's not that important of a time. So I think it will help the league grow, give it a little more enthusiasm, a little more pep in its step for a what could be the future.
So let me just chime in for a second. I'll come to you in a second. So one of the comments we got from one of our listeners to on the website, worldsoccertalk.com, was from Ra. And Ra says, I firmly believe that MLS will never be relevant without promotion relegation. So Kartik, I'm going to flip that question and send it over to you. But you mean, can MLS ever be relevant? And what will it take for that league to be relevant?
So I think it from a lower division angle, having worked in the lower divisions, mostly second division, right, for much of the last 15 years, there was a lack of relevance in our matches because no one was fighting for promotion. So what I was just about to chime in and say is that I was at a match in St. Pete in 2014 or 2015, where the Rowdies finally beat the Cosmos, and there had been this pent up resentment, and that's a rivalry that goes that's a rivalry that predates anything in MLS, right? That was arguably the biggest rivalry in the old NASL. So that's a rivalry that goes back to the 70s. And I do think the Rowdies fans would have stormed the pitch that night at Al Lang if there hadn't been these really clear displays of security lining the concourse. But so you get into rivalries like that. Rowdies Cosmos was for us in the NASL, Strikers Cosmos, that sort of thing, Strikers Rowdies, because you don't have the promotion and relegation. I think once you have Pro Rel, all of these sort of derbies, and they're not really derbies by a European definition, and all these kind of put on ways, manufactured, right? MLS has a rivalry week where they're mixing and matching teams, right? To face each other in a rivalry week where they sell a sponsorship to a sponsor to sponsor rivalry week. All of these sort of strange things go away, and you don't have to be, the word is, inauthentic, because that's what a lot of American soccer is when it comes to creating, trying to fuel passion and create passion over something that would be very natural if you had an open system.
What I find interesting, though, too, like looking at this, so this past week is, I mean, if you're a soccer fan and you've watched any of these games, and there's a whole bunch of other games we haven't even mentioned that were just as crazy and exciting, Hertha Berlin against Hamburg in the German relegation promotion playoff too, the first leg of that. And there's a whole bunch this weekend, and we'll talk about those in a little bit as far as what are games to watch this weekend. But I find it really interesting that if you look at some of the top U.S. soccer writers, they're completely ignoring all these games. It's as if they're not watching them, which I'm sure they are, but they're not even mentioning it. There's very little mention of, like, hey, did you see that Nottingham Forest? And what a story Nottingham Forest has been. This is an amazing story, but none of them are talking about it at all. Kartik, why?
Your guess is as good as mine. I mean, in fact, I think there's some resentment of us talking about it so much among them. They want to create some sort of there's some sort of unwillingness to talk about promotion and relegation fights and talk about things that don't involve the massive clubs in the U.S. among U.S. soccer media. They'll talk about Real Madrid. They'll talk about Barcelona. They'll talk about Liverpool, Man City, etc. But they don't want to talk about Forest. They don't want to talk about the fact Steve Cooper. And I was on TalkSport last night talking about this. How does the American audience view Steve Cooper being at the bottom of the foot of the table when he takes over Forest and now they're on the cusp of promotion? And I was like, the American audience isn't aware of it. They don't care. I think they may have noticed the Everton thing, but based on American soccer writers, they're not talking about it. And I think that there's a growing sense of, if it's insecurity or an inferiority complex. And I thought that we had conquered that as Americans. Look, I will readily admit, Chris, 15 years ago, when you and I first met, it's more than 15 years now, but whenever we first met, I had some of that. I was very insecure. I would force MLS into my narratives. I would force an angle of an American player playing in a third division in Germany into what I talked about. But I conquered that, as I think have most fans of the sport in this country. But among American soccer writers, there still seems to be a dependence on American narratives or narratives that involve Americans and insecurity about how American soccer or American players are viewed in Germany, England, France, Spain, Italy. And that fuels a lot of this. And so there are obvious incredible storylines that don't involve Americans directly or may reflect poorly on the way the game is played and administered in this country that they just won't touch.
Yeah, my personal take on this is that I think that by them talking about it or discussing it or mentioning it, they're not even mentioning it, it shows the inadequacy of MLS. Is that it's a league that looks very poor in comparison. I mean, you look at the championship and look how exciting it is. You look at the level of play. You look at all the different teams, the variety of teams, different playing styles, some really good coaching. From top down, it's a good league. It's a really good league. And I think by talking about second divisions and the playoffs and the promotions and the relegations, it really pinpoints the inefficiencies or deficiencies of Major League Soccer. Now, Kyle, I'm going to switch over to you for a second here too, because Nottingham Forest is a club that Kartik and I will know intimately. I mean, we're older, much older. So we know the histories of those clubs. We've watched them during all sorts of different decades, highs and lows, all of the stories. We've seen the films. We've watched the documentaries. We've talked about, we could talk for hours about just Nottingham Forest as an example. Kyle, as a younger soccer fan, as a younger American, and it's okay if you don't know the background or the history, but what does Nottingham Forest say to you? And what's your level of interest in this club and what they're doing right now?
Well, you guys talked about how Nottingham Forest hasn't been in the top flight in over 20 years. And you got to look back for me watching soccer growing up. All I'm going to watch is the Premier League just because that's what's on Fox or ESPN or NBC while I'm growing up. So I didn't know too much about Nottingham Forest. Frankly, they were out of sight, out of mind for me. All I knew about them was, hey, they won a couple of European Cups and they have more than all these major English sides. And I always thought that was funny. Same thing with Aston Villa. And that was the only understanding that I had of Nottingham Forest. And as I've started to, grow my soccer watching portfolio, and I started watching the championship, you get to know a little bit more about Nottingham Forest, but still, I don't know too much about them. It's kind of the same thing for Leeds, before they got promoted back to the Premier League, I didn't really know too much about them. There's a YouTuber that I watch that supports Leeds, and that's what I would think about whenever I would watch or hear about Leeds. So for Nottingham Forest, it's the same thing. Every time I would see Nottingham Forest, I would think, oh, that's a club that won a couple of European Cups, but I wouldn't think anything more about how they have one of the longest and proudest histories in terms of English soccer, especially. And that's my interpretation of Nottingham Forest. But I think that'll change starting, because I watched their game against Sheffield, both legs in the playoff semifinal. And so I think they're starting, especially if they get promoted back to the Premier League, they'll I'm sure, make a comeback and, you know, start to grow in terms of the younger audience's knowledge in terms of what they've been able to accomplish in their history and where they'll be going from there.
Yeah, it's a shame, actually, in a way, for Huddersfield Town, because they're the team that's doing really well, that's also in the final, playing Nottingham Forest, and no one's really talking about them, although they should, because they're a really good team. But Nottingham Forest, I mean, really is the Cinderella story here. Kartik, let's go back to just that second leg of that Forest Sheffield United game, the pitch invasion. One of the things I love about Nottingham Forest, as well as the playing style and the history and what the club stands up for, is the fan base. The fan base in terms of the songs, the chants, the Mullican Tyre, all the different songs that they sing. It reminds me of Leeds United because they are such a unique fan base, very passionate. But what about that second leg, Kartik?
Yeah, and unlike Leeds United fans, they had a greater tolerance for Brian Clough coming to their club and Peter Taylor coming to their club. Well, Peter Taylor didn't go to Leeds, that's right, but he did go. Obviously, Brian Clough went to Leeds. Mullican Tyre, by the way, is sung because Kyle mentions the European Cups they won. Paul McCartney, Wings, was also Denny Lane also co-wrote that song, so we have to call it a Wings song, was the number one song in the UK for the year that Nottingham Forest won the league and then won the European Cup the following year. So that's why they sing that song. There's a symbolism. It isn't just randomly, hey, it's a popular song, let's sing it. So there's a meaning, like there is with a lot of these supporters. So on the second leg, guys, I have to talk about the officiating of Michael Oliver, because this to me is a knock-on effect from VAR. And obviously, when you have Stuart Robson as your co-commentator, he's going to point out every little thing that maybe I would have missed otherwise. Every little thing that the referee is, because he's that good, right? And he's that willing to say the controversial things on air. But my sense in the extra time of that second leg, and I do think Sheffield United maybe can feel hard done by the way the balance of these calls went, and obviously this match was at the City Ground, and maybe Forest fans, as you're talking about, Chris, their passion influenced it. But I think Michael Oliver basically pulled out. It would be like a footballer pulling out of a critical tackle three or four times in a critical stage of the match. I think there were decisions Michael Oliver didn't want to make because he's used to being bailed out by VAR in the Premier League, and there is no VAR in the Championship. So he basically decided to keep his whistle in his pocket, his cards in his pocket, a second yellow card potentially for Jack Robinson, a potential sending off he missed, a potential penalty he didn't want, a penalty shout he didn't want any part of. It was really, to me, illustrative. The match was amazing as it was, right? And Kyle and Chris, you both talked about the passion and just how great that match was. But I think it also highlighted to me how VAR, and this is an unintended consequence, right? The advocates of VAR don't think about how it affects the actual officials and how they proceed maybe in matches without VAR, or how it changes their routine. But I think this was the 30 minutes of extra time, a clear indication of how VAR has definitely negatively affected how Michael Oliver calls matches, and he's become more tentative about things than he would have been 3 years ago.
So speaking of the Championship and the threat of a team possibly being relegated to the Championship, Kyle, what about this weekend? What's your match to watch this weekend?
For me, and I know the headlines for NBC are all about, you know, Manchester City, Liverpool. But for me, the game I'm most interested in, the storyline I'm most interested in following is Leeds. So they travel to Brentford this weekend for, you know, Championship Sunday or Relegation Sunday is the real threat for Leeds. I've enjoyed watching Brentford and I've enjoyed watching Leeds. And I'm sure some of that just comes from watching the passion. You know, Elland Road for me has been a special place to, no, I haven't been there obviously, but it's been a special ground to watch over the last year. Because you look back at when Leeds was promoted, they had COVID, so there were no fans there. But this season, with fans back in attendance, I think they've been a real joy to watch, especially with some of the late drama that Leeds has been able to pull together over the last couple of weeks. So for me, it's all about the relegation battle. It's all about Brentford and Leeds. And I believe the other game Burnley is playing, I'm blanking on it right now.
Newcastle.
Newcastle, yeah. So yeah, that's my focus for me is the relegation battle. I think Everton, you know, they showed you what it's all about. They showed you the passion in it. And I think we're going to see a similar kind of emotion from Leeds or Burnley. And I think they're both on the road, which is kind of a shame. But yeah, that should be a fun one for to watch both those games, Brentford Leeds and Newcastle Burnley.
Yeah, and Leeds has to win this game. And it's probably against the worst team they could possibly face in that it's a team that's flying high, that's unstoppable, that's playing at home, that's playing for fun, and that's Brentford. So, you mean, unless Brentford have already kind of packed their bags and already thinking about their summer vacations, this is almost the impossible dream for Leeds United, but we'll cheer them on. We'll hope that they can at least get a win there, and even a win is not going to guarantee them safety either. So this is going to be so exciting. Kartik, what about you?
Yeah, and just to add to that, Brentford's supporters, you talk about supporters who are long-suffering and who are great supporters in West London, this match is going to be a celebration of them staying up in the Premier League. So, there's no side that lower division supporters loathe more than Leeds. So I have a feeling it's a really bad situation for Leeds. So hopefully Jesse Marsh can get something out of it and they can stay up. I'm going to go to Serie A same time, or I think an hour later, Sassuolo, who is a very good team, hosting Milan. Milan need a point to win the title, assuming Inter win their match. Against Sampdoria, and I think this is going to be tougher than people expect. So my recommendation, guys, is actually to watch the second half, because the first half you're going to be watching Leeds, as Kyle suggested, or Burnley, or one of those relegation fights in the Premier League. But switch over to Paramount Plus at halftime, or at halftime of that game, end of the Premier League matches, and watch this match.
Yeah, and my tip for watching that Championship Sunday, which is a weird name, but that's what NBC calls it, is to watch it on Peacock and watch Goal Rush, because that'll have all the action from all the games, whip around show. But my game to watch this weekend, my recommendation is Atletico Tigre against Boca Juniors in the Copa de la Liga final from Argentina, 3 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday on Paramount Plus in English and then Fanatis in Spanish. And looking forward to this final, which I believe is played at Cordoba, which is, I think, Mario Kempes is the stadium that's named after him. So that one's definitely going to be my recommendation. Looking at TV streaming news, earlier this week, there was an announcement from Fox where they did their upfronts, which is their basically their pitches to the different advertising companies out there, saying like, hey, look at all these great programs we have coming up in the next year. This is why you should advertise with us. And part of that announcement was naming Clint Dempsey as their new Fox soccer analyst, and he's going to be joining them for the coverage of World Cup 2022. Clint is still going to be working at CBS Sports, so he's going to be doing double duty at CBS Sports. He'd be doing most of the CONCACAF games. There's some games this June, actually, in the CONCACAF Nations League. But for Dempsey, this is a huge move, and I think actually my take on this is that he's going to be a good fit for Fox, because he's all American, but at the heart of it, and I hope this stays true for his time at Fox, is he's been a little bit more balanced in his analysis about the U.S. men's national team. So in previous broadcasts on CBS Sports, when they've had the U.S. games, usually Charlie Davis and Aguchi Onoewu are in the tank for the U.S. men's national team. Just talking about, you know, how great they are, and like, this is going to be wonderful. And then Clint's the one that says, like, yeah, okay, that's good, but we're missing a number nine. We have issues in terms of the playing style. I mean, I don't think this is the right approach. Those types of things. So I hope and pray that Clint Dempsey remains that, not contrary, but at least more balanced in his analysis when he does go to Fox, and he doesn't get sucked into kind of the Fox rah-rah USA machine. All right, next news item is that Univision and TUDN have announced that they've renewed the rights to the Gold Cup and the CONCACAF Champions League in Spanish. And last but not least, I'm going to mention this one just because it did come up this week. And Kyle, I'll go to you on this one. But Leo Messi... There was news this week from South America. One of the reporters there mentioned that Messi might be going to Inter Miami and for his share of 35% of the kind of shares in Inter Miami, and this is going to happen. I wonder, what's your take on this one, Kyle? You think this is a good move? You think this is a smart move? And do you think this is actually a real thing that's going to happen?
I think that the part of Messi receiving 35% of Inter Miami makes it a little bit too outlandish for me to fully believe. And I'll preface this by saying I'm a Messi fan. I'm a Barcelona fan, so I'm going to support any move he does. I still think that he still has the ability to perform in Europe for a couple more years. But I do think eventually towards the twilight of his career, he will end up in MLS. As much as I might like to see him go back to Argentina and, you know, go back to his home country and play for a little bit there. I think that this reported deal is just a little bit too much to believe, because 35% of Inter Miami, I don't know how much the club is worth in the present market, but that's a lot of money for a player, especially for a club that is only in its, what, second or third season in Major League Soccer. They're still growing, they're still developing. Obviously, they haven't had too much on-field success, and they're giving up so much to one player. And I also think it's weird the fact that, I'm sure this has happened before in some example that I couldn't think of off the top of my head, but having a player who owns a part of the entire organization play on the team, and I get that it's Messi, and I get that his draw is expansive, and he's going to be able to bring in millions of viewers because they support Messi or Barcelona or whatever. But it's just so much for one player, and I don't know how much he'll be able to provide to Inter Miami that I'll actually provide them success on the field. I'm sure it'll help a little bit, but for 35% of the entire club, it just seems like a lot. And the fact that it's at the end of his PSG contract, which expires at the end of the 22-23 campaign, it's all just a lot, and it's a lot in the future. I don't know how much I believe it. It's weird. That was my first opinion, was that I just thought it was weird to read, and it was weird to think about Messi receiving 35% of Inter Miami.
Yeah, I think in many ways that this is something that any reporter that has an opportunity to kind of has a way to speak to the public, and if he or she drops a news item or kind of I've heard this from a source that Messi is going to Inter Miami for a share of 35% of the club, guaranteed, you know, that's going to create headlines. So I think a lot of it too, I think to me, is basically sensationalism. It's trying to generate clicks, trying to generate publicity for that particular reporter and for that network, and they know that people will read it, and this is a story that broke, and then everyone worldwide went crazy over it. I think the timing is interesting in terms of MLS still negotiating the TV rights deal, and the timing of this definitely, I'm sure, raised some eyebrows. And I'm sure Apple TV is probably thinking about this, thinking, okay, wow, if we sign up for this one, maybe we will get Messi as part of the deal, where you can just imagine the TV ratings and the actual number of tickets would be sold to games. So I think it's going to happen at some point. When, we're not sure. But that 35% number was kind of, to me, like a red flag to say, like, you know, this is a BS story, really. This is kind of sensationalism. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. And first up is Nick, who has some questions about streaming. Nick says, big fan of the podcast. I just had a couple of questions regarding the upcoming UEFA Nations League and AFCON qualifiers in June. Fox Sports picked up the rights to the UEFA Nations League from ESPN, and I was wondering if there was any information about their plans for streaming the matches. ESPN was great because they had all the games archived on ESPN Plus, so I could always go back and watch old games. Not sure if Fox Sports is planning on this, and I'm not holding my breath. Also, AFCON 2023 qualifiers kick off in a couple of weeks, and I was wondering if anyone had picked up the rights. I think ESPN had the rights last time around, but I haven't seen anything for this edition. So, Nick, good questions. AFCON 2023 qualifiers are going to be on beIN Sports. So you'll be able to watch those games starting, I think, June 1st, I think it is. But the first week of June onwards on beIN Sports and beIN Sports Connect. UEFA Nations League. So yes, FS1's going to be broadcasting those games, select games on television. So if you go to our website, worldsoccertalk.com, and then click on TV schedules in the main navigation, you'll see near the bottom, it'll say UEFA Nations League TV schedule. And in there, it has all the games listed and who's showing what. In regards to streaming for the UEFA Nations League, and there's some big games coming up. Germany plays England. Italy plays Germany. France plays Croatia. There's some big games in June, so a lot to look forward to. Streaming details have not been announced yet. We do know that Fubo is going to be broadcasting or streaming some of these games exclusively. We just don't know which games yet. So as soon as we get that information, we'll update that schedule, and I'm sure we'll write a story about it too. All right, miscellaneous. Dave's got some good feedback here from the last podcast, and he says, how did you find the US Open Goldcast? I heard during a game that Hercules was running a whip-around commentary. I checked ESPN Plus quickly, but did not see it. So Dave, on that one, yeah, no, great question. And this one, luckily, this time I was able to find it, because sometimes when I go into ESPN Plus and I'm looking for something specific, especially if it's Football Americas, it's hard to find. It takes a lot of digging and searching and down the here and over here and left, right. So this one, luckily, when I went into it, it was near the top. It was listed and I just clicked on it. So I was lucky on that one. Dave goes on to say that your comments on Fox streaming seem at odds with Lachlan Murdoch's public comments. Murdoch stated a strategy of Tubi for AVOD and linear for major sports and news. I did not take away that he opposes streaming. He brags about Tubi results and potential, but that seems major live events fitting better with linear for now. If they lose MLS, does Fox have any rights, sports rights, that are sufficiently niche to be streaming only? Maybe some car races? I agree with your caution that Fox risks being left behind if they don't ever pivot. So in regards to that, Dave, good questions again. So what I meant by that was that it wasn't that Fox hates streaming, although I did say that. It basically is saying that, you know, with Fox not having a streaming product of their own other than FoxSports.com or the Fox Sports app, it's a weaker player. And most of those games that they do have are on television, and then they have to partner with someone like Fubo for the streaming side of things. Interestingly, go ahead, Kartik, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the Lachlan part is directed actually at my comments. So what happened with the kind of breakup between Lachlan and James, although they had obviously a sibling rivalry for the company for years, but James was much more bullish in 2017 and 2018 on streaming. And part of the Disney-Fox deal, which we know Fox sold so many assets to Disney, right? And it affected our sport, it affected soccer as well, is that Disney had a vision for streaming that they had built out in 2016 and 2017 when they had previously, when they had invested in BAMTech, right? Baseball, Major League Baseball Advanced Media, and had started building their streaming platforms to launch Disney Plus in 2018 and launch ESPN Plus in 2018. That Fox didn't have that same vision. And James, unlike his brother, James Murdoch, unlike Lachlan, shared that vision that Disney had, that Bob Iger had at Disney. Now we are 4 years on from that. So I do think it's possible Fox sees they're being left behind and Lachlan wants to pivot. But my sense is that they were very conservative about this, very traditional about this, Lachlan and his father, and they are now getting left behind. And Tubi not showing live events, live streaming events, does leave them behind where Disney is and where everybody else in the space is.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Kartik, because Fox also said this week in that upfronts that it will put its World Cup games, the archive, on demand on Tubi. So it's not live games on Tubi, but replays on demand of the World Cup on Tubi, which might mean that you wouldn't need a cable subscription to watch those replays. But the issue I have with Tubi is that because it's advertising supported, it's a good likelihood that you're going to have commercials. Just as we saw with beIN Sports Extra commercials during games. And if you're watching it on demand and you're in the 11th minute and all of a sudden it breaks to a commercial and it comes back and you've missed like 2 or 3 minutes of the game, that's not a good viewing experience. So maybe they would start it back off, start as you come back from commercial, maybe you continue at the 11th minute. But still, that breaks up the continuity of watching the match. So that's not a perfect scenario either. It's funny, though, too, with Fox, because it always reminds me of the show Succession on HBO, which I'm sure is modeled a lot after the Murdoch family in terms of kind of the siblings and kind of the power grabs.
Oh, totally. It's totally the Murdoch family.
And then Dave finishes off. It says, interesting to hear your thoughts on 538's soccer power index. Sounds like I may be more of a fan of their work than you are. Soccer is such a high variance sport that it is nice to have predictive metrics based on more than just final scores. The age-old debate of resume or a resume versus potential. All models are wrong, but some are useful, and that is why they play the game. Yeah, my issue with 538 more so goes back to, I think it was the 2014 World Cup, where they had the predictive analysis about who would reach the final. And World Soccer Talk at the time had our own predictive analytics in terms of who was going to reach the semifinal and the final. And our numbers ended up being more accurate than 538's. And of course, there's a lot of weight put on 538 in terms of everything that they do. But I saw a huge hole in their data based on that. And ever since, I've kind of really taken their numbers with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I think in terms of what I said about their model, I don't necessarily I don't have any basis of comparison. But I do think it's a little odd that basically every team in one league, their SPI will be higher than every team in another league, right? And that was the oddity. And my own personal experience is in politics, and we built a better model at the Florida Squeeze to predict Florida elections than 538 has. But that having been said, I do kind of agree with Dave, because I do think it's good to have the metric. It's good to have some sort of reference point that factors in every competition to a team's relative strength, because the thing we have now is we don't have, if you look at the Premier League table or the Championship table or the table in the Bundesliga, it doesn't factor in cup matches. It doesn't factor how those clubs have done in Europe. It doesn't factor in so many things that may be neat as a fan, as a predictive model. The thing, though, that has happened with SBI is it got so laughed off the ESPN FC show, right? I mean, Dan Thomas would make jokes about it endlessly. I think it did get a bad rap from that, and I shared many of Dan Thomas and the crew's critiques, but I also agree with Dave. I think it is useful to have. It's just, and I agree with his analysis that most of these predictive models are wrong, but some are less wrong than others. So that's kind of where I stand.
Next, we got some feedback about MLS. Noah says, I would just like to shout out to whoever provided that tip a while back about getting around MLS streaming geo-locks by using Hulu instead of going to ESPN Plus directly. Since then, I have been much more likely to tune into Philadelphia Union games and MLS in general. I don't really understand why games are geo-locked anymore with streaming in the first place, but I certainly appreciate this easy workaround. Kronos says, geo-locking is the main reason I don't watch much MLS. Can't watch my local team, the Colorado Rapids, without getting cable, and it's not 1994, so I don't have cable. Happy to pay to watch, but not if it means I have to get cable. All the other big leagues except NFL do the same thing. Nuggets, Rockies, and Avalanche are almost always blacked out, and as a result, I've lost interest in teams I can't watch. Not sure how these leagues expect to build a fan base this way, especially since few young people have cable. It is the definition of penny-wise, pound-foolish, although I realize there are a lot of pennies in regional sports networks for now. Kyle, so you're a fan, As I understand it, Kyle, of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are doing very, very well in NHL. How does it work for you living kind of in the Tampa Bay area as far as blackouts? Are you able to watch every game if you want to?
First of all, Chris, I want to thank you for remembering that I'm a Lightning fan. We're recording this on a Friday, and I don't know if you guys followed the NHL playoffs at all, but the Lightning won with a goal in the last 5 seconds last night, so that was very thrilling, and it was very nice. That's probably why I might be a little hoarse today. But in terms of regional sports networks, it's the only reason I have cable here is to watch the Rays and the Lightning. Everything else I go through, you know, any kind of streaming or like Fubo TV, for example. But obviously that doesn't carry a Bally Sports Sun here, which is what we use to watch the Rays and the Lightning. It's awful. I hate it. I hate that I have to use it as much as I love the commentators that are on Bally Sports with the Rays and the Lightning. It makes it a lot harder. It's obviously a lot more expensive to have two options. I mean, I understand that we don't have to have both Fubo and cable, but I wish there were a way that, you know, regional sports networks could be on like a streaming platform. That's my one beef with the regional sports networks is that I can't watch it if I don't have cable. And as much as I love watching the Lightning and the Rays, it's almost not worth the extra funds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. All right, moving on. Next up is Daniel. Daniel says, good evening, Chris and Kartik and Kyle. I have a question. It's a long one, so I apologize in advance. These relegation battles in the Premier League have shown me once again that open systems work. Everton is fighting so hard, and watching them lose at Brentford the past weekend shows the excitement of open leagues. Maybe in other leagues it isn't as entertaining, but in England it has my undivided attention. Now, my question is, what is the point of watching American soccer? I don't mean that in a way of being cynical. It's just a general question. America even tries to be like England, calling our leagues USL Championship, USL League One, USL League Two. Heck, I'm shocked they don't even call the MLS the American Premier League. As a fan of soccer, I find it very frustrating that FIFA has done nothing to keep the integrity of promotion and relegation present in the United States. I also have supported my local local team three times. I watched the reincarnated New York Cosmos die. I watched New Amsterdam FC die. Now I am on the Long Island Rough Riders that currently play in USL League 2 because they play about 15 minutes from my house. That team has been around since the 1990s, but they always have been a semi-pro team that is more paid to play for kids rather than an actual pro team. I watch the New York Red Bulls from time to time since that's my original local team, in quotation marks. But again, what's the point? A New York team that plays in New Jersey. Players being promoted and relegated seem to be the only thing that happens here. This is why I stopped watching American sports for the most part, besides college sports, because the atmosphere resembles that of soccer, more authentic and genuine, rather than a manufactured defense and let's go blank team, whatever the team name is. That's just my take. What are your thoughts, and what do you think about Americans supporting teams overseas rather than supporting our local teams, using my whole experience as an example? Whew. Kartik.
Daniel is not an alias for me, but I could have written that same exact thing. I totally agree with every word he's written. One brief correction. The Long Island Rough Riders were a professional team 25 years ago. In fact, a number of players, Mike Petke, Jim Rooney, John Walniak, played for them. They have now relegated all the way to USL League 2, which kind of tells you then they were a second division team in those days, tells you how this closed league system works is because you can't get promoted to the, quote, Premier League or MLS in this case, you end up having diminishing returns with your business model, and you either go out of business, as he references the New York Cosmos and New Amsterdam have, although New Amsterdam had a very strange owner, but that still, they went out of business. The reality is they're not playing. Or you self-relegate, and in the case of the Rough Riders, they've self-relegated two divisions. Now, I'm in the same boat. I think many of the listeners know this. I have worked for teams that have gone out of business. I have supported teams that have gone out of business. I've supported, I think I counted five or six clubs that no longer play. Okay, and then the other club that I still support is a club that I work for that was in the second division. It had to go down to the fourth division because of governance issues with USSF, and then had to move to the third division. Now they're back in the USL Championship, which is Miami FC. So, yeah, I totally and none of this was based on promotion and relegation. We had filed a CAS claim, our club, to try and open up the American system, and we didn't get the ruling we wanted at the CAS. But yeah, I totally agree with everything Daniel says. It's very manufactured. I can't watch closed leagues, which is why I continue to support, like him, American college sports. I'm really into that still. Its atmospheres are authentic. As Kyle mentioned at the beginning of the show, SEC football, very much like the Premier League in terms of its atmospheres and its relevance and traveling fans and all of those sorts of things that you don't get in American pro sports. And to me, a lot of American pro sports are like inner office games, right? It's like the branch office in Tampa playing the branch office in New York. I mean, it's like, to me, it's not very interesting.
Intramural games. It's interesting.
That's the right term. Thank you. That's what I meant.
It's interesting, though, too, because if you look at any Alexi Lalas's tweets, and I don't follow Alexi because it's just, after a while, it gets just too much. But whenever the question of promotion relegation comes up, and oftentimes he takes questions from his followers, is the first thing he would say is like, well, what do you want? Do you want a system where clubs go out of business and you have like LA Galaxy and New York Red Bulls and all these teams going out of business because the billionaire owners the team gets relegated, when the reality is that you've got so many lower league teams that have gone out of business in this country in the last, well, definitely 20 years, but you go back for the 100 years. How many teams, how many tombstones are there of teams that have set up and then died? And they've died because there is no open system. There's no opportunity for them to move to whatever level they're at, to move up the ranks through to the very top. So it really suffocates the lower division soccer in this country. I think we're at a point, really, to be completely honest with you, where Major League Soccer is probably at its most difficult position in the history of this league, because now I think the gig is up. Now, with having access to as many games as possible from around the world, there are more options than ever before in this country. And because there's so many options, there's interesting storylines. There's, again, relegation, promotion. We've seen the passion on the field, the passion from the commentators, the players, the pitch invasions, all these things, because they have meaning. And I think at this point in time, MLS has probably the least meaning that the league has ever had, even at the same time that there's more teams expanding. Now, I will say, again, if you are a MLS fan or a fan of an MLS team and you live in Atlanta or Seattle or Kansas City or Los Angeles or Charlotte or Orlando or Miami, any of these cities, Toronto, etc., it's great. It's a great night out. It's a great night out to support that team. Go to your local club and watch those games and cheer on your team. My issue is kind of really the national perspective or the North American perspective for US and Canada is that these games are not meaningful in a national context. On a local level, yes. On a national level, you're competing against the rest of the world and you can't compete under its present situation in terms of the way that the league is structured. And promotion relegation may not be the answer. If anything, it could be blowing up the whole system and starting it all over again with more of a meaningful platform to actually build upon in terms of the way that the teams are set up. And it's not single entity. We don't need that anymore. This is not 1996 or 1998. We don't need single entity anymore. So, all right, I'll get off my soapbox. Kyle, anything else to add on that topic?
I think it's interesting you talk about how going to like a Major League Soccer game is a night out, and I think that's so true of American sports. I remember watching Mark Cuban talk about the Dallas Mavericks, and he said, you're not going to remember you know, most of fans won't remember like a certain shot or a certain play, but they'll remember the experience. So when he took over the Dallas Mavericks, he said, "I just wanted to turn it into an experience, not necessarily a sports team." And he said that's where the future of American sports was going. And it's such a different take on the European sports. And it's so true, regardless of NBA or NHL, MLB, NFL, all these American sports, and MLS included, they're just centered around, like you say, having a night out. And I've go to a lot of Tampa Bay Lightning games, and, you know, hockey, in my opinion, and it's a biased opinion, you know, a lot of fans are there for the team. You know, Max Kellerman said there's 20,000 fans that support hockey in each city, and they all have season tickets. So you go to a game, and, you know, they are a little more involved, especially compared to the NFL, which I'm a fan of, but, man, the fans there, they're just bland. And so I don't know if it's something that is necessarily a Major League Soccer issue. I think it's more something that just applies to American sports in general, the fact that going to an event live is an experience rather than going to support an actual team.
Yeah, definitely good points there, Kyle. We'll finish up, too, just a couple of quick comments here, too, about U.S. Open Cup. Roberto says, I just looked at the matchups for the next round of the U.S. Open Cup. There is still a chance for a USL team to advance. The games recently showed why not too many advance. There were 3 to 4 giveaways by the goalkeeper or defenders that led directly to goals. All in all, the games were entertaining. Seattle disappointed me once again, still resting most starters instead of maybe going for the triple. While with the World Cup, the MLS season is compressed, and by August and September, there will be 2 games every week. What will they do then? And then Jason says, I'm disappointed that no lower division team in the US beat a MLS team in the 4th round. A USL team making the quarterfinals looks very slim now, let alone the semifinals or final. So listeners, we've covered a lot of topics on this episode on a whole range of different subjects. So let us know your feedback. We'd love to read out your comments on air. You can reach us through the website in the comments section at worldsoccertalk.com for the podcast, as well as by email. The email address is web@worldsoccertalk.com. We're on Facebook. You can always message us through there. So facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. And, of course, on Twitter, @WorldSoccerTalk, you can message us there, too. And just let us know if it's a comment for the podcast, and we'll save that for the next episode. Kyle, what's your Twitter handle so people can follow you there?
My Twitter handle is @KyleFanslerUF, you know, because I went to Florida. Very proud that I went there.
Okay. And Kartik, what are you proud of, and what's your Twitter handle?
KKFLA737. It's FLA because I live in Florida. So, and I went to UF also, actually, like Kyle. So KKFLA737.
And the 737 is in regards to?
An airplane. It was because when I first set up my email accounts 25 years ago, when I was actually at UF, they were all taken. So I just said, what's something I'll remember? Airplane, 737. So it's not that I like the 737. I kind of do. I was flying Southwest a lot at the time, so they were all 737s. But yeah, it's Florida and 737.
There you go. And it's easy to remember. Mine, you can reach me at the Gaffer. Or at the main account, which is at World Soccer Talk. All right, listeners, this has been a fun episode. Thank you for staying with us throughout the entire season. Yes, the Premier League is ending this weekend, as is Serie A, but there's so much more to look forward to. It's going to be a really busy summer. We've got a ton of teams coming in person. We've got teams Barcelona, Manchester City, Bayern Munich. So you got Barcelona, Man City, you got your guys' teams, guys, and then also Chelsea, Arsenal, Paderborn. I mean,
Everton.
A ton of teams coming.
And we have to mention Everton.
Everton, thank you.
We've talked about Everton all episode.
I know we didn't. All right, Kartik, I'll let you lead us out on this podcast.
Enjoy your football.